why do you think diversity behind the scenes in film will be important?
We've been promoting that for 20 years in terms of, I mean, me and my brothers, we've all been proactive writer, producer, directors, more than just talent. And when we do movies, when I do a TV show, you walk on my set and it's multicultural. I think it's important that we write more and we direct more so that we tell our stories from our perspective, and you know, and we can hire people and give good people the opportunity to go be great. But good, don't just hook up a friend. Don't be like, I'm gonna hook you up, you gonna do costumes. Why? Because you dress nice. No, it's somebody who is good at what they do, who is looking for an opportunity, who's willing to work hard and hustle. It'd be nice to give them that opportunity.
That was Marlon Wayans, the youngest brother of the incredibly talented and funny Wayans family. As most of us know, this family has been working in the film and TV industry for decades. This family unit has experienced poverty firsthand. It was the oldest brother, Keenan Ivory Wayans, that helped open doors, not only for his family, but others aspiring to work in the industry. Nothing came easy, and everyone had to work hard. Everyone has a story. And the stories behind the camera are just as important as the stories in front of the camera. In the second episode of Diversity in Film and TV, you'll learn about the founder of CineSpace, Nick Mercopoulos, affectionately known as Uncle Nick. You'll learn about him and his legacy that he left behind. We have a story to tell. All of us have a story to tell. And I definitely want to get deep into what diversity really means. I don't want people to be confused to think that it's necessarily just about African Americans. Granted, yes, we did this during Black History Month. However, it doesn't just call for African Americans. When we say diverse, we mean gender, your sexual orientation,
religion, socioeconomic level, education. It's about inclusion. So if we use the term diversity or diverse, everyone fits under that umbrella. When we speak about our program at CineSpace, it traditionally is filled with people from African American or Latino backgrounds because we work with the underserved communities around the west and south sides of the city. And they are predominantly occupied, you know, where the residents are African American or Latino. Initiatives that are going around the industry, not just here in Chicago, to get more diverse voices to the table, we're trying to capitalize on that in Chicago. And we're saying, absolutely, you know, I'm from a diverse background. Mm-hmm. I grew up on the west side of Chicago. I'm African American.
And you're a woman.
And I'm a woman. Mm-hmm. So I cross a lot.
Yes, I check off a lot of boxes.
You know, and so in having that background in this business after so many years, it's wonderful to be able to come in and say, okay, since we all want to work toward getting diverse voices and at the table and to be heard and so forth, I'd like to dedicate my career to making that happen. Again, talking about the fact that diversity does not simply mean black and
just
white.
Black and white.
It's everybody's voice. Mm-hmm. And that is a time to do it. So this 6-part series will allow us to cover a lot of groundwork. And it's going to give some history on the Mercopoulos internship program. We'll also hear from Alex Picios, who is the president of CineSpace Chicago Film Studio. He has a fascinating story on just how he got in the business, which this is not his background whatsoever. He's a real estate guy. So his story of how he got in with his Uncle Nick, who is actually the reason why we do the Mercopoulos internship program and have the Cinecares Foundation, we'll get that great story.
I'm born and raised in Chicago. My dad, a special education teacher with Chicago Public Schools. My mom was a stay-at-home mom. I'm the oldest of three boys, myself and then my two brothers, Dean and Nick, who work in the film business now too. We grew up in a 3-flat on Higgins in Harlem, and I went to Chicago Public Schools, John W. Garvey School, which was then a school where they were busing the kids from the west side. You know, if you really look in the history, in 1978 or 79, that's when they started saying, you know what, we need to start busing the minorities to the north schools. And I was one, I remember it, you know. Mm-hmm. So I grew up with, and at my school at Garvey was African American, Hispanic, Italian, Greek, it was everything. So I grew up in a total multicultural upbringing, you know.
Absolutely.
Not because my parents were immigrants.
Yes.
I mean, my parents were born in Greece, you know. So that kind of, you know, and then we went to, then my dad moved, they changed Chicago Public Schools. You had to, if you were a teacher, you had to live in Chicago. Well, in 1986, they changed that, so we moved to Morton Grove, and then I went to Maine East High School, and then from there, I went to Northeastern Illinois University, got a teaching degree, secondary English, and I was taking special education classes, and I was doing student teaching, and then I had another uncle, my mom's brother, John, who owned a fur and leather store, and he calls me up and says, hey, I'm going to open up this store, I need you to come run it. You know, I was student teaching, and then my uncle asked me, you know, what are they going to pay you? I'll never forget, it was $22,500, you know? And he's like, well, I'll give you $70,000. I said, I guess I'm going to be a salesman.
Right.
So, broke my dad's heart to this day. He still said I should have been a teacher. But I did that for about 10 years. And then built a good fur and leather store on Michigan Avenue. It was called Elon Furs, above Cole-Haan Shoes.
Oh, yeah,
store.
We know Elon.
Yeah, I ran that. But that was great. I met so many people from Aretha Franklin. You know, I baked beans with Aretha Franklin in her gown.
She wore a lot of fur.
Twice I went to her house. I drove to Bloomfield Hills. And we made the sable coat that she wore in the inauguration for Clinton. We made that for her.
Oh, wow.
I got to know her real well. Steven Tyler from Aerosmith. I met politicians. Like, being there in that location, you meet so many different people.
Sure.
So you take that, and then I left that and got in the real estate business. I wanted to do something different. I was tired of retail. Talk about 7 days a week. So the one thing with me, the work ethic has always been the same. When I ran that store, it was 7 days a week. I think we used to close Christmas Day, but that was it. And Thanksgiving. Wow. We were open New Year's Eve, New Year's Day. Being on Michigan Avenue, you always
absolutely. Did.
So it was 7 days a week. We never took days.
So you were used to hard work.
Oh yeah, always. Yeah. So you know, that was always, you know, my parents were hard workers. My dad was a teacher during the week, and he ran managed a restaurant at night, a banquet hall. So he worked 7 days a week. So I always had that work ethic in me, which I think goes back to this neighborhood here and seeing a lot of these kids don't have. The person to emulate. They don't have to look at that. A lot of times, not the father isn't there to say, "Man, I'd see my dad working." I'm like, "Man, that's the way it's supposed to be."
Right.
So I always saw that in my life. My grandfather, who lived in that 3-flat building, worked 7 days a week. My Uncle John with the first store worked 7 days a week. I mean, literally 7 days a week. There was no days off except a holiday. Then after the fur business, I get in the real estate business, and I build this little company that, you know, from one house fixing it to two houses to three, building a 6-flat, a 12-flat, all of a sudden, you know, there's 50 people working for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I build a good-sized development company, you know. And I pretty much built 50% of everything by the United Center when the United Center, if you go to, you know, Western, Damon, Van Buren, and Washington, all that new construction I was building, and in 2007, which I thought things were just going to keep going, well, they could boom down is where they went.
Yes, exactly.
So, and the real estate business is what got me to Nick, you know.
Yeah.
Now, there was something that happened that got you to Nick. In between time, real estate was the last thing that you were doing. Now, did something happen with the real estate where you were facing some things that happens in life. It happens to all of us. It's downfalls.
Oh, yeah.
Now, you know, what was that situation?
So, you know, when I get invited to a wedding in Toronto, which I don't want to go to, obviously, in that moment, that snapshot, I was sitting at home, very depressed. There was a time, I mean, my wife still talks about, you know, I didn't shower for 3 weeks. It was a $13 million bankruptcy, which I couldn't afford a lawyer. The sheriff's coming every day knocking on the door. My wife has to go back to work while she's pregnant to clean teeth because she was a dental hygienist. And I'm sitting there at home. Now, picture you've got a little taste of my whole life. I always worked. I love to work. So now all of a sudden, I ain't working. I got no money. And my whole business is, you know, you got people you owe money to. You can't pay your employees who are good to you. I mean, it's bad.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So it's a bad place. So I go to this wedding not wanting to go because my cousin Jim, you know, would say, come on, the cousins got to meet each other. And I said, eh. So Jim kind of figured things were not great. So, you know, he sends a car, a Hertz minivan with an envelope with a couple dollars in it. And the Hertz guy's like, here, this is dropped off. And there's a note from my cousin. I want you coming here. So I go to this wedding, and I'm not even, I still don't want
not
to
be in
here.
Your right mind.
Not like, feeling it, yeah.
But I figured I'll get my wife out of here too. So we go for the ride, and at the wedding, I talked to my Uncle Nick, and he's sitting there in his white suit. I remember sitting outside smoking a cigar, and he's like, "How's it?" And here's an uncle that I was not very close with. I mean,
yeah, that's the amazing part of it.
Once a year, once every 2 years at a wedding or a funeral, and it was not, there was...
Now, this uncle was your dad's?
This uncle was my mom's...
Okay.
My grandfather's first cousin.
Okay.
So he wasn't even an uncle.
Oh, wow.
It's a removed uncle.
Yeah, yeah.
So, he's like, "How's business going?" I said, "Well, it's going okay, And he's like, "How's it going okay?" He says, "The whole country upside down. The real estate market is..." I go, we're working it out. And he says, "Why don't you send me all your documents? I want to see where you're at with everything. Maybe there's some opportunity I can help you with something." And I'm like, "This guy..." Well, I thought, I'm like, okay. Now I'm thinking ahead of him. So I go home. I send him all my documents, loan documents, this document. Like, he told me, actually, another thing he said, he says, "I want you to write on a piece of paper all the money you owe to people you borrowed from. And I don't care if it's dads, moms, uncles, gangsters. I need to know. I want to know everything."
Yeah.
So I wrote it all down and sent him everything. I said, "I got nothing to lose." So he calls me back. And his first sentence to me, and I can't tell you what he tells me, but he says, "You're effed."
Yeah.
And he ended it right there. And he says, "I'm going to come to Chicago next week," he says, "on Porter Airlines," which I still didn't know what Porter Airlines was, and now I do, obviously, because that's what he took. But Porter Airlines is the small airlines that flies to Toronto to Chicago. And he sits me down, and when I pick him up, he says, "We didn't even get in the car." He goes, "Have you talked to a good bankruptcy attorney?" I said, "Actually, yeah, I have." So we went there, and it was like you're on candid camera. It was a 5-minute meeting, and I remember distinctly how he says, "My nephew has mud on his face. He got his head in some," and he says, "We got to wash it off." So how are we going to wash it off? What's the number here? Mm-hmm. And he's like, "Nick, it's a big bankruptcy. It's going to be about $25,000. And they paid him. And he goes, "Kevin, you know what to do." And I let start telling people, stop calling, stop torturing his family. Because Nick knew that, once you hire the attorney and you just give the card, they leave you alone.
Yeah.
So then we went for coffee at Greek Islands, and he pretty much said, "Don't be embarrassed to yourself." He says, "You took a shot. I'll try to help you find a 100,000 square foot building. I think they're Chicago. Maybe they learned their lesson. Hollywood did love Chicago, but Hollywood disappeared after the 80s because of extortion, because of unions screwing up businesses, because all of a sudden cables are being stolen, because they didn't want the business. And so Hollywood is a finicky people. They don't come. They got no problem with it. From that meeting, it was 2 years till we bought a building. He said, "Find a 100,000 square foot building with certain type of," he told me, "I want to see these type of ceilings, this type of width. And maybe, we'll build some stages. I think there's something here."
Because at that time, remember, CineSpace in Toronto was in existence. So it was almost like he just wanted to put an offshoot in Chicago.
Yeah,
but a small one, he was thinking at the time.
I mean, CineSpace is the largest film studio company in Canada. So Natalie, he wanted to do something small. He says, "I'm going to help you out. I'm going to borrow you some money." He goes, "100,000 square feet, you'll make a good living for your family. And you get your life back. It's going to take some time." But with Nick, again, he threw the carrot, but that didn't mean anything. It was 2 years.
You had to work for it.
It was calls. It was setting up meetings. I pick him up, and all of a sudden we're meeting with Mayor Daley then. Mayor Daley was the mayor then. And we're meeting up with union officials. So every time he's coming, he's not asking me to set these meetings up. I'm setting them up. So I'm trying to figure out, Mark Hogan, the funny story, Mark Hogan, who's the head of the IATSE union, he loves the story. When I go out with him the first time, I take him to Greek Islands to pay for lunch. Now, he's the head of the union. Well, my credit card didn't go through.
Wow.
And he talks about it to this day. He's like, and he ended up, of course, I blame my wife, like she was shopping. But because it's CineSpace's name, but he loves the story. The card didn't go through.
And wow.
And I'm like, "God darn." He's like, "Oh, don't worry about it." Because Nick at that time didn't give me money to go make this happen.
Yeah.
He didn't say, "Well, here's $50,000.
No. Sure.
So for 2 years, I didn't get paid.
Yeah.
For 2 years, there was no money. For 2 years, all sweat and making...
Equity.
Yeah, it was all, And here I am, making calls, trying to get meetings. I'm at home. My wife's at work. I'm driving the two kids to school. The one's a baby. I'm feeding her. I'm getting quality. I mean, it was like, if there's a camera on me, you want to see a movie. I was Mr. Mom on steroids. So, you know, because you're trying to not just take care and help your wife, and you're trying to do this.
It's tough.
Yeah.
So, and then, you know, it happened. You know, we found this whole property came on the market. We bought the one building, which ended up being a 300,000 square foot building. And then we built the stages. Boss came in and the Playboy Club, Transformers, and then Nick's like, man, this is full. This other one's available. See if they'll sell us that. Well, we had four transactions. Four transactions got us 1.5 million square feet. And right now we have 32 stages and they're all full, you know. So yeah. I think the point of CineCares and how CineCares and CineSpace intertwine is even myself, everything that I got was help.
Absolutely.
So, and I try to tell these kids here, I'm not giving you anything.
Absolutely.
It's an opportunity. Because it wasn't given to me. Trust me when I tell you.
Yes.
Yeah. It wasn't
That's
given.
Yeah.
And it's still like, you know, it's still like that, you know, Nick left an operating agreement that pretty much, Nick still runs the company, even though he's passed 5 years.
Yeah.
So, trust me.
He left the plans.
Yeah, so the plan's there. So that's why I don't have, which is good. Just like he didn't have tolerance for laziness, I'm the same way. You know what I mean? It's like, hey, you want to do it, do it. You don't want to do it.
Tell her the gift he gave you that hangs in your office.
Yeah, yeah. So one of the things he gave me, I don't know how, he must have been going through my stuff. I had my eviction notice that was on my door, and he framed it for me. And it hangs in my office now today.
As a reminder.
As a reminder, and it's, you know, it shows people when they come see me, he says, you're going to be a lot of smart people in your life that they know everything. And I don't care if they went to Harvard, Yale, or Princeton, he says, show him your diploma. He says, trust me, your diploma blows away anyone's diploma.
Absolutely.
He says, your diploma's life and reality. So it's like a blessing that actually, you look at life now, it's a blessing that I went through all that at such a young age. I was still able to fight back. Because
and you look so young now.
Yeah,
just,
right, young.
He's a baby.
I'm trying to figure all this out. Like,
I'm old.
No.
He's younger than I am.
Believe
me. Is he?
Yes.
I'm an old soul.
Wow.
Yeah, we're both old souls, though.
Chicago always had in the 80s, you know, Blues Brothers, Ferris Bueller's Day Off, 16 Candles. I mean, they had a run, but they never, most of those shows used to maybe use one stage and do all locations.
Yeah.
They never had an impact like here. So, you know, they have 32 stages, and the key now is Chicago isn't just shot for Chicago. I mean, Empire, which is here, is set in New York. Crisis and Mind Games, which there were shows shot here not too long ago, were Washington, D.C., and somewhere up. Like, the shows were getting mixtape, which is here now, is California.
I was going to say, that's
so,
California.
You know, that's a success here, is what's happening. And with content being king right now, we're timing and a lot of this stuff really has just come together. And there's a lot of content being made, you know, Netflix and Amazon and Apple. And the business has changed. You know, pilot season isn't even pilot season no more. It's every... They'll bring shows. You never know when the show's coming. You know?
Yeah, it could be year-round now
It's different now.
Yeah, last summer, the first summer I was here, it was like summer's dead, and then everybody comes back in July. And last summer, nobody left. It was like, there was always something going on. So,
it's a fun business, and what makes it fun really is, believe it or not, the business is great, but the good thing is, you know, really going into the community and trying to change.
Why do you think that
lives?
The diversity is important in the film and television industry?
Well, one, because the neighborhood here, I mean, you're in North Lawndale, and, you know, let's be honest. I mean, if they were building film stages in Lincoln Park and it was all African-Americans working on the sets, wouldn't the community say, well, where's the jobs? I mean, you got to emulate what's in your neighborhood and emulate where you're at.
Right.
Absolutely.
It's the right thing to do. I mean, this neighborhood has gone through, I mean, since the Martin Luther King fires, there's been nothing. I mean, there's Ogden Avenue from Western to go, keep going west. You can't find an apple. You can't find a tuna sandwich. You can't find anything. It's a food desert. You know.
Yeah.
So how are you going to these kids? How are they going to compete? You know, with other kids, they can't.
Absolutely.
It's from the get go. And so, you know, you start to see these jobs of these kids. Now it's great, but God, if you need to see in 20 years from now, when you see kid, I got three kids and I got a mortgage, and I'm paying for a college. Well, that's when this stuff is real. That's when you're like, wow, this worked.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's working.
Yes.
But the real work is in 20 years
yet
from
to
now.
Come. Yeah.
That's when you really say, man, you'd really change people's lives.
Absolutely.
You know? And that's really what, you know, luckily enough, I'm young enough and, like I said, I stay healthy enough. I'll be able to really see these kids that are getting these jobs and see them have their families and live in nice homes, and their kids understand what he's doing. I mean, we take it for granted. I mean, we want to have a piece of salmon. We go to a restaurant, say salmon, asparagus, and, well, that's a healthy lunch.
Right. Quality food.
Quality food. Right. Different
health. Things
and
like that.
And that goes to your brain. And that's how your brain works. And so that's why it's really important to me to do what
you're
we're
creating
doing.
Like this generational idea of, you know, of course, with African-American households, a lot of them, we spoke previously about the income in a typical household is like $23,000 a year. Yeah.
For the household.
Right.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Right. And then we've also talked about working with other nationalities and races on set.
Yeah.
And by yourself being Greek and bringing in different cultures or nationalities, that was a big leap for you then, right?
Yeah.
Was it, I mean, I know you said you grew up going to school
I think that's what brings you here today, the way I was brought up. Mm-hmm. You know, I grew up, like I said, with immigrant parents that were not, I mean, zero bit of racism. They love everybody. And I
Absolutely.
Grew up with that.
Absolutely.
You know, so you go
Likewise.
Visit your dad at 10 years old and he's a teacher at Darwin School. And his classroom was totally diversified. And they had Mr. P shows and high fives and hug. I mean,
absolutely.
It's a way. And to me, when I came to this neighborhood and you really see what's happening, you're like, man, this is wrong. Yeah. And then what makes it worse is, you know, you go to Greek Islands for lunch today at noon and it's 10 minutes away. And it's the most hottest neighborhood in the city of Chicago, mm-hmm. bustling. Mm-hmm. So 10 minutes away, there's this imaginary wall that doesn't want to be broken down on the west side of Chicago, you know, and I know we are breaking it down. I see it.
Absolutely.
Because I see the development now coming, and what the best part is you can try to give these kids the jobs where they can buy their own little houses.
Absolutely.
Here. They can, you know, it doesn't have to be, you know, you want them to buy, like, if there's one thing you tell these kids, well, you're saving your money, go buy a two-flip.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Go buy one of these little houses right now.
Yeah.
Buy, because the neighbor's going to go, you deserve, enjoy the growth.
Absolutely.
Let your house that you buy for $150 be worth $350 in 10 years.
Absolutely.
You deserve it. Well, buy in your own neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
That's where, you know, you want these kids.
And I think when I came in, there were two things that Alex and I were very much in sync with, and that was that we wanted the crews that are working on the productions to reflect some of the stories that are told. If you watch Chicago Fire, PD Med, Empire, and so forth, it's wonderful. We want the crews, you know, to reflect that as well. And then to Alex's point, you know, he shared with me once that Uncle Nick talked about us being good stewards. You know, we're visiting this community. This community is not visiting us. So to be a good neighbor in the community is to open your doors to everyone and say, if we're creating an industry that's developing more and more economic, you know, empowerment for the city of Chicago, we want everyone to benefit from that, not just a select few. So it's very important to us that that is more widespread.
And so Uncle Nick pretty much left you this roadmap.
Oh, yes.
You
oh, yeah.
already had it instilled in you. So now you're still carrying over his legacy, and now we've started the Sinecures Foundation. And we're giving opportunities to underprivileged youth to now work on set.
Exactly.
And this is a chance of a lifetime because
oh, yeah.
they're
oh, yeah.
avoiding going to a four-year, six-year college a university paying money for the education, but this foundation is, well, I guess I'll let you.
And listen, the reality of it is almost or even more than half of the folks who've come through our program are college graduates. Mm-hmm. Our program has an entry that is lower just so that based upon the communities we're dealing with, if they can't afford to go to school or take secondary education, they shouldn't be barred from having a living wage job, right? Mm-hmm. So half of our students have actually gone through college and have a four-year degree. And in the 12 or 24 weeks that they've been on this campus, many of them will say they learned more during that time mm-hmm. of being here on campus than they did through all of their studies, because this is real world work. This isn't, they aren't coming into onto our campus and observing and looking. And they are a member of the crew from day one.
It's very hard.
It's very hard. They work 60 hour grit.
and grind. Yeah. They come in and they work 60-hour weeks minimum, you know. And if you come in here and you didn't have a job before you came here, and 1 week you go from 0 to 60. So you best be prepared to work hard. And boy, some of the stories are funny. They're exhausted. They're tired. They got blisters here and there because they're not used to it. But by the time they get to week two and week three, but the more important part for us is not only the transformation it's making for the actual interns, it's the transformation for their families. Mm-hmm. This year, I don't know if you noticed that, Alex, this year at the wrap party, people brought their parents, mom and dad. Yeah, mom and dad came, older brother came, and so forth, because it's becoming a program where the family's saying, wow, look what my young adult has done, you know, and what they're doing. They literally want to come and see what the heck's going on here, that they've transformed his or her life, and now they've got this career, you know, where they're doing better than most people in the family are doing, you know, after 24 weeks.
So how do you feel about the outcome of the program?
Oh, it's going great. You know, listen, you couldn't be happier with the way it's going. Sheila's like the mama bear for these kids. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, she really is a support for them, and she's got the passion to do it. And, you know, and I'll take a script on Uncle Nick. We just started. I mean, this is nothing. Yeah. This really is nothing.
So where would you like to see it in the next 10 years?
I'd love to see it grow to, hopefully we have 30, 40 kids doing it every 4 months, and take it even to the bigger level. Well, you know, I picture doing like some type of Oscars party, you know, we'll be doing some neat things and just keep growing this thing. And I mean, it's unbelievable where we've gone in such a short period of time. It really is. It's mind blowing. But because I'm that guy that, you know, when Nick bought one building, you know,
he bought the next.
So let's go, you know, we got to just keep on building this thing and finding ways to make it successful.
What do you think he would say?
Nick would be out of his mind. Nick would love this.
About Nick's legacy. What about Alex? When Alex is no longer here, what would you like to leave behind? Where would you...
You know, really the same, you know, hopefully you kind of leave the same foundation that I was built on. You hope you just keep building on that foundation. Because Nick always told me, you know, you can't build, you know, big houses in mud, you know. And the foundation is we keep building it. So the legacy really is this, you know, that the family, you know, if it goes down in time, Alex was given an opportunity from a great man. And that great man unfortunately passed young. And so the idea is to keep that legacy going and, you know, keep creating jobs and building a community and helping people and growing the business, you know. And what's happened now is, you know, this business is really counted on the film tax credit. And, you know, a lot of film tax credits disappear because I don't think there is enough of this type of outreach of internship programs. DePaul University having their footprint here. So I feel real strong about, you know, this being a really big legacy because the state will always say, man, this is great for the community. Look what they're doing. So it's helped even us on the business side. Yeah. You know, the film tax credit. Now it's like, hey, you get rid of this film tax credit. Well, now you're hurting the internship program. You're hurting a school that's ranked 13th in the country in their film school. It's all started here. You know, it's part of building the legacy too. You know, this business is, there's so many minds, you know, like the film incentive leaves. Well, you got a problem then, right? The Chicago film office doesn't get the right person given the closings for streets. Well, now that's an issue. So the great thing is we're building this foundation that can handle everything.
Absolutely.
And that's why it's becoming very real. And now everyone's taking notice to it. You know?
They are. Because we spoke before, like, I was not aware of this film studio.
Oh, yeah. No, a lot of people.
A few months ago, I didn't know.
Yeah. No, it's slowly, you know, and it's going the way we built this studio and the way we're building the foundation and everything else we're doing slowly. You know, we bought one building. We built one stage for Boss. We built three for... We never said, let's just go build them. No, slowly. Because then
slow and steady wins the race.
Right?
Yeah.
There's no fast and furious stuff, you know.
The strength that he had, the vision was there, and this man was going to make it happen.
He was truly a visionary.
He had to have been a visionary to take what was sitting here, which was essentially a vacant parcel of nothing almost, and to turn it into what it is today, required vision.
You know, he was a visionary. There's a guy that's a visionary. Nick Markopoulos is a visionary.
It's like a father figure around here. People really revered him. He was the type of person that you would just walk up to and want to give him a big hug.
The most important thing that everybody needs to know about Uncle Nick was you knew exactly where you stood with this man immediately.
He immediately impressed people as somebody who could get things done in a hurry without a lot of headlines around it.
My Uncle Nick and what he did for me is what really drives me to give back.
Everything I ask people to do around here, get involved in and so forth, they say anything for Uncle Nick.
When I first met an Uncle Nick, I couldn't understand one word Uncle Nick was saying.
I'm providing the services. The prices are comparable. My space, it's a little bit bigger than the other facilities, which is making every producer or director to consider to use my facilities.